listening to KBOO Portland.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kbu.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kbu.fm.
Follow KBU on Instagram at KBU Radio. Ear to the Streets.
Baby, you understand me now. I looked all around me, but to see nothing but four gray walls staring at me. The policeman said to me, son, they won't build no schools anymore. All they build will be prison, prison. They won't build no schools anymore. All they build will be prison, prison. Cause today, yeah, I am a prisoner.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli, and today we are here with Bretto. How you doing, Bretto?
Peace, peace. How you doing, Adam?
Peace, bro. It's great to have you back on, man. It's been, I don't know how many years, actually, since you've been on the show, so there's a lot to update on a lot of things. Your music, all your projects. Let's circle back first. If you could please just introduce yourself and talk about how we got here.
Yeah, man. So, you know, been around Portland for a minute, man. Originally out of Watts, California, Los Angeles. Been in this hip hop scene since the mid 90s, late 90s. Took a dive, wound up going to federal prison, you know, for some improper behaviors while I was out in the Bronx, New York City. And came home around 2016. Just been hitting the road ever since, man. Continued with the art while I was in prison. You know, wrote about 300 to 400 songs. Been releasing music ever since, working in the community, doing mental health advocacy, you know, with organizations here locally and working with our so-called gang members, and created a nonprofit called Leaders Become Legends, you know, that we're giving back to the community, strictly helping our people, man, those formerly incarcerated, indigenous, so-called African-American and Hispanic brothers and sisters who are coming out of the system, and just trying to stay creative at the same time, man. At the same time, trying to stay creative and, you know, get land, property, and ownership.
Let's talk a little bit more about the music. You have so much of it, and I think at that time, I'm trying to remember exactly what album we were talking about that you had just released, and but since then, what have you been working on, and how does all that relate to all the work that you do?
Well, the music, the art is, you know, it's therapy, man. So, you know, there's all kinds of therapies, and one of them is art therapy. And so the music to me is like a way to express myself and what I've been going through, you know, since I can remember, you know, being raised in the 80s, man, in Los Angeles, California, you know, in Watts, Compton, South Central, and, you know, expressing that in a creative, unique way. So also it was in prison doing my bid. It was a way for me to get out and escape. You know, I taught myself with the help of another guy from D.C., paid him a coffee bag every month to help me learn how to read and write music, and taught me how to play the piano every weekend. So that music part of the brain kept me in a certain place while I was locked up. And so when I come home, it's still part of that program. It's never going to change. It's part of the therapy and the outlet.
Can you talk a little bit about this, the kind of stuff that you put out over the years, and any particular kind of recent things people should be looking at, checking out?
Yeah. So since I've been home, the first project I released with Liquid Beat Records is Gangsta Jazz Volume 2. I had a Gangsta Jazz Volume 1 EP prior to being incarcerated, and I was fighting my case that came out while I was incarcerated. But since I've been home, it's been, you know, building with Liquid Beat Records, and Gangsta Jazz Volume 2 is one of the projects we released. And then we released the Bus Crates album. I did a joint album with Bus Crates out of Pittsburgh, entitled Eternal Riding. And then after that, I did an album with Vitamin D out of Seattle, a joint album entitled Rusty Blades. All of those are courtesy of Slump Funk, and with help from Slump, courtesy of Liquid Beat and Slump Funk Entertainment. So that's the new thing right now, is me trying to get my entity off the ground, which is Slump Funk Entertainment, as far as in the arts goes.
In context of music inside and making music inside, can you talk about your experience with that and doing that? How is it different inside? What is, of course, the lack of resources? What are any resources, if they were any?
First of all, we incarcerated, so it's hard to get what you want. Even, you know, as an MC, you want instrumentals, you want this, you want that. So didn't really have a luxury of that. But, you know, I just would listen to a lot of jazz. I would listen to, you know, whatever I could find on that computer system. It was like a ill Bureau Prisons system. They pulled their catalog from like Walmart. So it was like random stuff on here. I'm talking about, you could type in Mike and I and an album might pop up, but then you can't find a Tupac album, not one. You know what I mean? So it was kind of an ill thing. So I was like digging through stuff, man. I mean, I spent so much money. It was $1.50 a song. I think I had over almost 2,000 songs when I left. Like, you know what I mean? It was just ridiculous amounts of money. But I was buying all kinds of music to get beats in my head, and I would find rhythms that I liked, and I would just hold on to them and write throughout the day. Or I would lock into my cell and just write to these Coltrane, Davis, man, whoever I can get my hands on. They had a lot of Robert Glasper, mm-hmm. and that's when I first really got on to him, was in prison. So I was listening to a lot of his stuff, like, man, this guy, he's got it, you know what I mean? And I wrote to a lot of his stuff, and fast forward, there's band slots on the yard. Every race has a band slot. In the band room, there's nothing electric. Everything is acoustic. So you got drums, you got the bass, you got a piano, and you got the a guitar. The bass, I think, was the only thing my boy Dino, rest in peace, he would plug into something. But it was just like an amp, and the COs had it locked up and all of this stuff. But so I ended up joining the band slot while I was there as an MC, wasn't playing the piano yet. And when you go to the yard, there's like this band room, you're locked in there for a certain amount of time, and you know, you can create and just have access to the instruments. So while I was in there, I would be the MC. We was making songs. Guys was writing, coming back to the, we was there every weekend. So fast forward, I'm going there one day and I see this guy playing the piano, and I was already studying music theory in my cell because my sister was sending me books when I was back in MDC Brooklyn. So I had all these theory books. So one day I'm going into the band room and this guy, he's playing some crazy stuff. Like, never forget this dude, white dude, short with glasses, ill dude, older guy. I was standing behind him and I can see the notes. And he was like looking over his shoulder, like, what are you looking at? Like, do you understand this? Do you know what you're looking at? And I was like, yeah, I think I do. He's like, what's that? I said, I think that's a A minor seventh chord or something. And I didn't get it right, but he was like, oh, you close. He was like, no, it's actually this, that. And then that started a relationship. He was like, do you ever play? I said, no, I never play. I just been reading books. And he was just like, man, well, you know, when you come out, we'll talk. And, you know, that started a whole relationship. My whole bit, I met this dude, paid him a bag of coffee. He taught me how to play. So now I went from being an MC in the band room to being an MC and playing the piano at the same time. Working with this guy, I got on the keys first time ever in my life and was playing songs while rapping at the same time. But if it wasn't for my guys in there, I would have never have done it because they was hyping me up. Because I was like, man, this is crazy. You know what I'm saying? This ain't my thing. So, you know, it was hard because we didn't have the resources, but it was growth.
Yeah. So what I hear you saying is that there is clearly no music program or programming going on at that time. Well, I mean, has any of those kind of things developed in that context?
Here's the program. If you're in the band room, you got to perform twice a year to keep your band slot. So twice a year, we had to go out on the yard and perform. Yeah. Just in front of a bunch of convicts looking at you working out. And the staff. You know what I'm saying? It was bugged out because you know, but here's the thing. We would be out there. We'll be playing our music. I mean, these dudes would be way on doing pull-ups, push-ups, working out, just staring at us, right? And then I'd be in the chow hall. It'd be another race. And you may be standing next to somebody that's another race while you're going to sit with your race. And I never forget this dude. I think he was a white dude or he could have been native. But, you know, the natives and whites click in prison. They don't mess with the blacks. But so this dude looked at me. He was like, hey, bro. And I stopped. I was just on my thing, moving, trying to do my thing. He's like, hey, bro. I was like, what's up, homie? He's like, man, you took me out of here for the first time in like 30 years, man. He's like, you good. I appreciate that. And I just looked at him like, dang, I wanted to cry, homie. You know what I'm saying? I was like, wow. He was like, man, that took me out of here. You know what I mean? And I just, that changed my whole perspective on what I was doing. Cause I was like low key, you know, the homies clowning me, ranking, talking about, oh man, you playing the piano, nigga, come out here to the, nigga, I'm in here playing this piano, man. Like, I ain't got time. I play chess, talk to war stories with you cats for years, man. I'm doing something different, you know, but it take a leader to do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I wasn't my own man, I wouldn't be able to do that amongst all these goons and still be a goon at the same time.
Let's go ahead and check out one of the tracks that you suggested that is indicative of, you know, a lot of that experience. If you want to talk about the track Black Excellence before we play it.
Absolutely. Black Excellence is a joint, man. So a lot of the songs on this record I previously wrote while incarcerated. Like I said, I wrote up to 300 to 400 songs while I was incarcerated, like lyrical songs and not just music. Also wrote musical songs. This is one of the songs that I wrote when I got out. It's not a song I had wrote previously. When I heard the beat, it called for something fresh. It sounded like a new beginning. And I actually wrote this, and it's just about me programming, getting out, the energy of what it's like when you're about 6 months to the door. Everything you done planned, you done got your, you know, all your stuff lined up, ready to get out. And then this song comes on. That's what that's about.
All right. This is Black Excellence. Libretto, joint album, Rusty Blades.
We got to say Vitamin D.
Vitamin D.
Yo, we made it back from the dead, you heard? All praise is due to the Almighty Abba in heaven. Blessings flow. Just gotta stay strong, y'all. Hold your head, study, exercise, be healthy, you heard?
Uh-huh.
Check it. Hey yo, yeah, we came up, made it from the bottom, can't tame us, or keep us in a column so dangerous. They blame us for their problems, misery, love's company, and Gomorrah and Sodom infamous. But yet they hit the follow, borrow a piece of my swag to make a fad, they so hollow. After it all, take a bow, we still here. Generations later, fresh out the feds, on paper, four on the tier, one on the rear. A year, halfway house, had the GPS on house arrest. Survived the stress, random piss test, micromanage aggression, searching my possessions. A king has a role, some confinement, oppression. Every day, celebrate, I don't wait in corrections. And we ain't never going back, released out the beast with the dreams of a life of hitting the streets again. Here to celebrate excellence in blackness, conceived on a pissy mattress, making cabinets in the kitchen, 10 prees, love between boy and girl in the system, completed probation, escape parole, detained, no bail, they lift your hole, and feel it when you got 6 months to go, so close to home, been surviving on your own, Shabbat shalom, got your headphones on, you hit the yard and roam, focused in the zone, let it be known when you get out that you got it right. Head high, bleeding confidence, secure in your accomplishments. They don't write. We go life off struggle in the jungle naked. Return with a fur blanket. Yeah, our DNA is sacred, beloved. Stay strong, seize the time. We gon' make it and take it. Come on. Younger generation, you heard? Just gotta ease the pace, slow it down a little bit. Don't be in such a rush, it's right there. Listen to the G's, drink lots of water, you heard? It's gonna come.
All right, you just heard Black Excellence, Libretto, Vitamin D, his joint album called Rusty Blades. That is a dope track. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Absolutely.
We get more of your music on the station. So since you've been out, you've done all this music, and then from there, a whole trajectory of mentorship that you've been involved with. Can you kind of talk about how that all started? I mean, you kind of talked about some of this kind of like peer almost like peer mentorship with kind of music inside, and then being out, you working with all these young people, young adults. How'd all that kind of shape up?
To rewind a little bit, before I took a dive, I was working at SCI, instructing a music program class, if you will, with DJ OG1, my man Ethan, and a guy named Josh Lakin. So we had an after school program going there from like 02 to like 08, I want to say. So that was really my first giving back, if you will. OG1, I will never forget. I was on the block hustling, doing my thing. Wasn't even thinking about a job back then. And he had rolled up on me and was like, "Man, bro, like, you got an album out, man. Like, what you doing standing out here doing this, that, and the third?" I said, "Man, listen, man, I'm not on tour. I got to get this bread. It is what it is. I go back to what I resort to." He said, "Man, meet me up at SCI. I got something for you." I go up there. He said, "Man, you finna work up here $20 an hour, and you're going to teach these guys how to rhyme in this class." And that's how I got my first job working. I did that until, you know, I got laid off with the whole collapse of the housing bubble and all of that stuff. And that's when I went back into crimes. But that was my first time, you know. And then when I came home, I started working at Southeast Works. I was volunteering at the Rosewood Initiative on 162nd to Start. I started a program there once again with me and my guy OG1. It was called RAP. There's an acronym, which Role Models Applying Positive Peer Pressure or Positive Pressure. Did that for a while, you know, and then went from there with the Southeast Works to POIC as a mentor. And it's just, it's been, with my record having a violent crime, it's been good to be able to be blessed to use my lived experience to get into rooms where I can be financially, you know, stable and stuff like that, you know? So I really just kind of thankful that Most High provided the path, because if I was to go somewhere and just try to get a job, I was going to be out here on a bad one and possibly could be back in prison. So, you know, it's good that I had that to fall on. And it's been, next year it'll be 10 years I've been home.
Can you talk a little bit more about that aspect of the past experience? Because that is what makes your program and the work that you do so effective. And that speaks to, what are the experiences of people getting out and like what those needs are, and how kind of the general folks outside don't necessarily really understand that, and how difficult it is, and what are all the different challenges and barriers?
Man, just being a felon, like, period. Man, listen, man, I don't know if you need people out there listening, those inside, those outside, New Jim Crow, read that book. Mike Crenshaw sent me that book while I was in there. I read that book in like 2 days, and everything in there is 1,000% like that. You do your time and then you get out and you got that F. It's not going nowhere unless you get it expunged in the state. In the feds, you got to get a pardon. Like me, I got to get Trump to get my gun rights back. It's not happening. You know what I mean? So it's like you're always marked for housing, for jobs, for anything. And it wasn't easy, man. I mean, I did 6 months in a halfway house, 6 months home confinement, slept on my sister's couch looking for a spot. Finally got a private owner to let me rent a room for $675 a month. And that's how I got into the rent market, you know? So I had to find private owners, you know, and felony-friendly jobs and stuff like that. But it wasn't the regular, you know, rigmarole for somebody without a background. If you sit around and think it's going to fall in your lap when you come home, you got to really push and exert yourself. That's one thing about me. I'm not ashamed of my record. So when people would ask me what you go to jail for, I had no problem telling them. I'm like, look, I got into a situation. I resorted back to some old ways, did some bad things, did my time while I was in there. This is what I did. Now I'm out here. I got a job. I can pay. Da-da-da-da-da. They respect that. I'm not ducking and hiding and all of that. It's like, nah, I did my time, and I'm a better person because I went to prison. If I didn't, I would probably be out here still knocking people upside the head, being Captain Crook. You know what I'm saying? But I had to switch it up. And that discipline and that program on the yard, it got me to where I'm at today. So
yeah, and you navigated all that. And then you're at this point, or I mean, you've been at this point for a while, where then now you're helping people navigate all these things. Can you talk about what those things are and sort of how it's evolved with the work? Because then you started the organization and...
Yeah. So, yeah, just navigating the systems, man, and, you know, getting into the jobs that help me be around working with people and working with, you know, say, guys who are, you know, trauma impacted, so-called gang impacted. It let me be able to step back and say, okay, where can I make a change that's not being done. I don't want to remake, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We're not going to just make a bunch of programs that's identical and everybody fighting for the bag. Like, that's ridiculous. So while I was inside, I was building with a brother, one of my mentors to this day, Cat, been down for like 20 years, 30 years from Chicago, GD, official Cat. And we came up with some ideas while we were in there. So when I came home, I kind of put those moves into motion with the help of my brother, James, JT, who was a co-director of Leaders Become Legends. And because we were sitting in the day room one day, we were talking about this gang banging, and he was like, you know, because he from a set, I'm from a set, everybody from a set is like, how are we ever going to stop gang banging? Like, what will stop it? And one of the things that we came up with collectively was like, you got to create the next generation of gang members. You got to create the next generation of gang members. And that's it. If you don't take them from babies or from wherever they at, kindergarten, whenever we start playing pick up the purple rag, pick up the blue rag, like 8-10 years old, and teach them that, hey, you're a leader. It's okay to be from where you're from. You got to remember, we come from slave ships. We come from slavery and cotton and across the transatlantic. We don't really have nothing. So that's why we adopt to these blocks and these neighborhoods, right? So the thing is, you got to teach them to be leaders, to be okay and proud of your neighborhood, but not in a violent way. Do it in a positive way. You know what I'm saying? Represent being a career-orientated dude from your neighborhood. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. And that's where Leaders Become Legends actually came from. We wanted to create the next generation of leaders, and then we just did that in the clean energy sector of work. So now we got Chicanos, Sereños, Blacks, Native Americans working on your roof, putting solar on your roof. We got guys who are leads who just did 10, 12 years straight. You know what I'm saying? We got Blacks working with Hispanics for the first time. Dudes wouldn't even be working together if it wasn't for the Most High and me sitting these guys down and telling them, you want a beef out here? You got a son, you got a son. Both of y'all need money. We're not inside no more. Y'all can't work together to get no money for your family? Now we doing it. You know, we had Bloods and Hoovers working together. Two enemies. You know what I mean? But this program is not for everybody. It's for leaders. If you're a follower, it's not going to work, because you're going to want to play games and you're going to get sucked into some nonsense after work. You know what I mean? You got to be a leader. So that's where this comes from, man. And it's just full circle. All of the work I've been doing, mentoring, and it just came in the formation of that organization.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit more about how this visionary idea went from that to this whole program and what the program's doing? It sounds like there's a lot of connection with you know, sustainability around solar. How does that, you know, support the community in different ways? And you guys are doing other stuff too. Tell us more about how all that kind of came together. There's a lot of moving parts there.
A lot of moving parts, yeah, man. Well, like I said, first off, shout out to my man JT. He actually came to my house one day during COVID, and he had a sweater that said Leaders Become Legends on it. I was like, ooh, that name is dope. I was like, what you doing with that? He was like, nothing. I just printed it on the shirt because I thought it was cool. And then from there, I said, man, that's bigger than that. That's a whole movement. And so with the ideas that I had from being incarcerated, took those, wrapped it up in a bowl, mixed it up, brought in my boy DT, Derek. He's actually originally from Oklahoma City. We were working at Rosewood and Southeast Works together. And we just kind of said, okay, we're going to do mentoring through employment. Because we noticed a lot of these guys not being able to keep jobs, even if they're getting paid $30 an hour, they couldn't keep the job. And we're like, why they can't keep the job? It's because they're not mentally ready. They got trauma. They got mental health problems. They got undiagnosed stuff from birth they ain't deal with. You know what I'm saying? And so you taking them out of jail and prison where they experience some more trauma and then expect them to go to work and keep a job. It's like, nah. It's not happening. So we started to work with their mental health first before putting them into employment. But the whole reason we got into solar is because of my guy, Tony Lamb, rest in peace. He actually worked at Rosewood with me from the beginning when I first got out. It was in the halfway house. He went downtown and got a gig at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And he told me about the PSEF grant, which was coming down the pipeline, and how they were getting votes for it to push it through. And he said, man, this is strictly for so-called frontline communities. And I think with your new program that you guys are making, quote unquote, Leaders Become Legends, this would be a good fit for you guys to try to get in right here to help your people. You know what I mean? And so that's the first time I even heard anything about clean energy. All of that stuff was when I was sitting at coffee shops with him over there in the Montevilla neighborhood on Stark, we would meet over there at these coffee shops. Man, I miss my guy, man. You know what I'm saying? He would put me up on game because he was working at Rosewood, but then he was down there interning at the Bureau of Planning Sustainability. So he was getting a drop on all of the stuff coming down. You know, he's in there with all the government heads, and he kind of told us about this green energy thing that's coming down. We applied for it the first year, though. We didn't get it. So we didn't get it. The next year, we got it, and we've been getting it ever since. They believe in us down there. You know what I mean? And yeah, man, we just trying to change lives, man. Like, solar is good, of course. It's giving back to the community. It's helping people save money with solar farms where they can tap in and get discounts on their electric bills. But more importantly is we're getting our guys career opportunities and getting them generational wealth building. That's what Leaders Just Become Legends is about. We got guys right now that's ex-cons, felons, making $60 an hour on these roofs with no, they ain't go to school for this, you know what I mean? Like, they just working and moving, climbing up on the ladder. Now, we're getting them trained and certified, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, we got one guy in our program that's an electrician. He's going through to try to be a journeyman. Strictly Leaders Become Legends, we're paying for him to go to school and everything. You know what I'm saying? He's going to be the first of many, that is. But, you know, rest of our guys are just coming and just working and busting their tail, like running their own crews. They running crews of guys who are civilians, guys who just went and applied for the job online and got the job. You know what I'm saying? Like, our guys is running them crews. So it's like, man, the Most High's blessing, man. It's blessing, man. And we just trying to, you know, keep doing it. Like, we got a building on 172nd and Division. It's about to be open, Lord willing, before the calendar flips and be fully operational. We're already doing trainings there in EV charging station maintenance. We're doing PV 101. We're doing solar installation and all of that right there in East Portland. So,
all right. And the website is leadersbecomelegends.org.
Yep.
leadersbecomelegends.org. What are some other things that if they have resources or if they need resources, what kind of things can people do to link up with y'all and support the project?
Yeah, I mean, just go to leadersbecomelegends.org, man. It, of course, we always would love donations, unrestricted funds we can use. And just, you know, if you have anybody interested in the program, we're not like regular programs, go to 16 to 24. We'll actually take somebody, you know, in their late 20s or 30s, even early 40s, you know what I'm saying? Because who's to say when you got it? Like, why is 24 the age to say, oh, they got it? The light just turns on. Nah. I went to prison well after my 20s. I was in my 30s when I went. You know what I mean? So it's like leadersbecomelegends@gmail.com. leadersbecomelegends@gmail.com. Send an email there with the client's name or the person's name. If it's yourself, put attention to Bretto in the subject line. And I'll definitely respond, link up with you in person, and we'll chop it up and see if, you know, you're a good fit for the program and how we can help if you're not. If you're not interested in getting on roofs and doing solar and you still want to be down, that's cool. But we only taking leaders. You know what I'm saying? We got a studio, a music studio in our building. We got silk screen t-shirt pressing shop in our building. We got an exercise room in our building. And we're going to be training in plumbing and electrical and solar and EV charging and everything else. So, you know, you can get in where you can fit in. And we just want everybody to be successful, man. That's the only thing we're trying to do. Make sure that people don't have to get incarcerated, go back to prison, curb the recidivism rate to try to provide for their families, period.
And the building, you said there's a few aspects of it that are going to be ready and launched next year. That's early 2026.
Yeah. We're running in it right now, but we're not going to be. So we have a computer lab, a GED testing center. We got a studio where I got all the equipment. I just got to go get the inside insulation done and everything. The screen press is running. That's open right now. We're taking orders. We do jobs for other organizations. If you're interested in having your company or your org, you guys need shirts, hats, hoodies, whatever, leadersbecomelegends@gmail.com. We can get that done. Yeah, it's only one side of the building that needs a little touching up that we're doing right now. And that's like more the workforce development side where like a lot of the machines and equipment will go. Once that's done, then the building is going to be done.
All right. Maybe you can help link us up, man, with some prison pipeline swag, man.
Oh, absolutely. Homie, you got you. Send us the logos. And
right on.
That's James' thing. Yeah, that's what you'll do.
All right, man. Bet. Okay, cool, man. Well, hey, win, man. So that is leadersbecomelegends.org. And Bretto, definitely check out his music online on many of all the major streaming platforms, and you've been listening to Prison Pipeline airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Special thanks to our amazing guest and to Prison Pipeline Collective member Karen James for post-production. Free them all.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Here goes nothing.
Tune in to KBOO for Drinking from Puddles, hosted by Brandon, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m.